Leon Lockridge joins Express Yourself now. Good morning, Leon.
Good morning.
How are you this day?
It's beautiful. We got a little snow, so it makes it all better.
You got snow down in Denver?
We did.
Was it dusting?
We'll take a quarter inch at a time if that's all we get.
These days, that's pretty much what we're assigned, isn't it? A quarter inch at a time. Every little bit helps, I guess. But
it does.
Well, thank you for joining us today. We're talking to you because you're part of a holiday show at the Cora Logos Gallery in Basalt. Looking forward to seeing your work there. I went to your website, which is Leon Lockridge, spelled LOUGHRIDGE.com, and discovered the Beyond the Gallery video, which serves, I think, as a very useful artistic statement for your process. So I'd like to start by talking about this or that. At the very beginning, you say you like to keep yourself off kilter and on edge. How do you do that?
Well, it's, one of the problems you're dealing with is I go out sketching a lot. I bring back my watercolor sketches. These are 20, 30-minute sketches of dynamic scenes I come across while hiking. Or I'll be driving along and you just have to pull over and do a quick sketch of this scene. So these quick sketches, then I bring back to the studio and try and translate them into a larger piece using this cumbersome, slow-moving process. And it can easily bog you down, just the cumbersomeness of the process. And that's the woodcut process.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, I just tend to have my watercolor as a roadmap in the beginning. I start drawing and I start printing the lightest colors. I'm using 1 to 3 blocks. And I'm reacting to the watercolor and what I have on the paper as I go. So I'm always spontaneously reacting and changing something. The woodblock image tends to take on a bit of a life of its own. Most times I can really expound on the sketch. So this whole process by always reacting, not planning out the whole thing in the beginning, and by always reacting throughout the process to the watercolor, it allows me to stay spontaneous and creative.
Yes, you talk about in that video how you managed to reconcile the spontaneity of the watercolor snapshot with the methodical nature of the woodcut process, and that's what keeps you engaged and excites you.
It's really important for me to capture in the woodblock what I captured in the watercolor sketch, that emotional connection I had to the scene.
Okay. You also talk about in that Beyond the Gallery video about the core abstraction. That seemed interesting to me. Tell me about what is that and how do you maintain it throughout the entire process?
Yeah. To me, there's what captures the eye of the viewer as they're walking around and looking at pieces, there has to be some sort of abstract quality that captures the eye, that brings the viewer in, and then there's the details that explain the story. But you have to have that kind of dynamic, abstract quality. It's an arrangement of light and dark shapes. In the Japanese art, it's called no-tan. I like to refer to it as the Rorschach factor, very similar to a Rorschach inkblot test. You have this dynamic shape hidden in the painting. People don't know quite why they're reacting, but they get this emotional reaction to it.
Okay. And so I guess the ways that you maintain that core concept are in the cutting of the block and then the shadings of color. Is that correct?
Right. I'm always approaching my images. I'm always building on value. If I get my value, color, and temperature correct, then you really don't need many details. The details tend to, a lot of times, kind of hide the core abstraction. But if you really have a dynamic shape, dynamic arrangement of color, temperature, that becomes a really strong statement. And then the details just help explain the story.
Also in that video, you mentioned that you tend to delve into something and you think about it a lot, sometimes too much, and that the printmaking process allows you to really think about it. And I noticed that as you were carving your block in one of those videos. It was a very almost meditative process.
It is. I mean, it's very physical. It's very active. But then again, it's very meditative. I think a lot of people think of me or have this image of me carefully, methodically carving a woodblock. And that's kind of very far from the truth. I tend to really attack the woodblocks and have the watercolor in front of me and then a proof of the woodblock. And so I'm kind of going after it. It is very meditative. But it's probably not what you would visualize of me very calmly, carefully carving. There's obviously times when I'm really trying to hold an edge, create a delicate line, and so I slow down at those points. But there is a very, there's a lot of quiet time. I tend to go into the studio and think, oh, I probably ought to put some music on, get distracted, start carving, and then an hour and a half later, I realize, oh, I never put any music on. Oh, well.
Absorbed.
You get very focused.
Yeah, how about that? I confess that printmaking was a mystery to me until I investigated your website. And first of all, let's start with the carving of the block. What is the wood that you're carving? Tell me about
that. So I work on a cherry veneer that's mounted to a fiberboard. So it's an MDF with a cherry veneer. And it's a quarter inch thick. And the benefit there is that being a quarter inch thick, setup is very easy on the press or on the guides. And we can get into that later, how I print. But, the cherry is wonderful. It's an even grain. The cherry doesn't tear out or splinter. And as opposed to cutting straight into a fiberboard MDF, the MDF won't hold an edge, delicate edge. But that cherry veneer mounted onto this quarter-inch fiberboard really holds the detail and allows me to, if I want to, I can bring out the grain in the cherry. Cherry is just a wonderful wood to work with when carving.
Interesting. And what are you carving with?
So I have a set of carving tools. I probably have 20 different tools, and of those 20, I use 4 predominantly. They're traditional carving tools, as opposed to the palm cutters. I like the long-handled cutters. And these are all manual, just elbow grease driven. I have a small veiner, so it's kind of a really small U, and then I have two other larger U's, and then kind of some flat cutters.
So,
and with that, I'm able to really create everything.
So you're capable of taking away a broad swath of that veneer, cherry veneer, as well as making very fine, delicate.
Right. And obviously there's tricks of how to take that veneer, a large swath away, without taking away what you wanted to keep. You learn, you do it once or twice and realize, oh, I didn't want to take that out. So you learn how to protect what you want to keep. And what I mean by that is the raised areas hold the ink. So whatever I cut away does not receive ink when I apply the ink to the block. And so those cutaway areas do not print.
For instance, on one of those videos, I noticed that those cutaway areas ended up being blue sky. So when you print, did you apply a layer of blue first before you inked the block, or how does that
work? Right. And so there's a few different, probably two main approaches to printmaking or relief printmaking. And one is called a multi-block. And that's where you have a block for each color. And so in one, one block would be the blue sky. And the red roof of the barn is cut away. Then there would be another block that would be the red roof of the barn, but the sky is cut away. And so, obviously, the red block is printing just red, and the blue block is printing the sky.
Okay, I see now. All right.
And now, the second approach is what I do is reduction. And this is where it can get kind of confusing. But if you keep the name reduction in mind, it'll help explain some of it. And here I'm... Technically, a reduction woodblock is one block, but I tend to use three. And you take that one block, and if you want to print the blue sky, you print a pale blue sky, and that's before the block has been carved at all. So the blue is over everything.
Okay.
Then I cut away the blue sky and go to a red. And print, and I cut out the shape of the roof of the barn, and then I print the red roof. So I'm reducing the block with each printing, color printing.
I see.
And it kind of makes sense, but then it all becomes muddy once you start trying to get into it. You kind of have to start thinking backwards. I found that's the best way to do things.
So looking backwards with that goal in mind that came into your mind when you made that initial watercolor snapshot.
Yeah, right. I'm always, I'm always thinking, what am I doing next? If I like that color, I need to cut away. In the actual process of printing, when I do some of the workshops, I have these little things people draw. Usually I'm doing a box and a three-sided box, and I'll have them draw the box, and I have a little exercise that they go through to understand what am I cutting away next? Because that can get quite confusing.
Well, let's talk about the inks. What are the inks made of?
Well, and I do two different printing processes. So the traditional Western uses an oil-based ink, and the ink is applied with a roller. And then the other process I use is a Japanese process. It's referred to as mokuhanga, or woodblock print. And there you're using a rice paste that is tinted with pigment paste. So it's almost, they tend to look a lot like watercolors. The oil-based inks, the Western tradition, the inks are applied with a roller. The Japanese inks are applied with a brush. And on the Western prints, you use a press to apply pressure. So the block is put on a bed, the paper is put on top of the block, and then a roller applies pressure as it rolls across the paper and the block. In Japanese printing, you're using what's called a baron, and this is a disc with a beaded texture that you rub over the surface of the paper, and the paper is sitting on the block, and that beaded texture applies enough pressure to transfer the ink. One of the big things is a lot of the commercial inks that you can buy in the art stores are based with linseed oil, and they tend to have a lot of fumes. If you're in a small studio with confined area, it's really easy to... The fumes can get really strong in the studio, and it's just not healthy. I started having reactions to that, and so it was either give up printing or figure something out. So I figured out how to make my own inks with a different oil that's not quite so toxic. And so now I make my own inks. I can print all day in the studio and there's no fumes. So it's much healthier.
Forgive me if this seems like a naive question, but once you've found your final proof and you've made your color runs and you've got what you want, are you making copies of that using that press, or how does that
work? Yeah, and so that's a good question in that a lot of people think, okay, you know, you spend time getting it all figured out. Well, that would be the multi-block, and there's a block for each color. But on the reduction, remember that I print a color, and then I cut away the block.
Okay.
The minute I cut away on the block for the second color, I can't go back and reprint.
Right.
And so what I do is I'll start with 40 sheets of paper or somewhere in there and start printing, and I'll print the first color run. Then I'll carve the block and print the second color run. And that process goes on carve, proof, print, carve, proof, print, until I'm done. And this can be 12 to 18 color runs, different printings.
So are you making...
You don't just hit a button and print it all.
Right.
None of the prints are the same.
Okay.
If you line the prints up along the wall and stand back 6 feet, they'll look all the same. But if you get up on them, you'll realize there's variations to the coloration, because these are all hand inks. I apply the ink by hand on each one.
Generally,
with a roller or a brush.
Generally speaking, how many copies of a particular print are you making?
Usually I feel great if I'm somewhere between 20 and 30 prints.
I see.
That's a good edition.
Uh-huh.
One of my clients said, you know, you should do larger editions. much larger editions. So I thought, maybe he's right. I'll try one. And I did an edition of 60. And I thought this thing would never end. It's just not twice as much work. It seemed like three work.
I can see that. Yeah. Based on my limited understanding, I can see that clearly. I noticed on your website you've had several collaborations, or at least one collaboration with a poet. You produced some prints, and the gentleman produced some poetry, and then you made it into a book. That's an interesting
project. Right. So this is our third collaboration together. He's a poet down in Santa Fe. We did one on the Las Montañas de Santa Fe, and that's the mountains around Santa Fe. And then we did another book on the Royal Road, which followed the Camino Real from El Paso, New Mexico, north to Española, New Mexico. And this was Oñate's route in 1495. 1495. 1595, one of them. Anyway, very early. He was the first Spanish to come into the area. The project we're working on right now is called Gorge Songs, and it's about the Rio Grande Gorge. And we're releasing it in a series of folios. And the Carlogos has one of the sets on display. And it's really been fun to break up the project into folios, into chapters, and deal with each one individually. And John Macker, the poet, will give me his poetry, and then I tend to react to his poetry. His poetry is very graphic. And so I tend to start coming up with ideas. And I think in the beginning you said something about kind of going beyond what I had planned. Well, this whole project is both of us falling victim to that, and that we thought we were going to keep it simple, but we keep adding more and more and getting excited about the projects, and they tend to get more complicated than we originally had planned. So,
well,
but it's fun.
I don't know what more you could want. That sounds great. That sounds really great. Yeah, it keeps you engaged in a long career. What is there still for you to discover as a printmaker, Leon Lockridge?
Oh, my goodness. I've been in this for who knows how many years, making. And you kind of think, I've pretty well seen a lot of everything. And then out of the blue comes some printmaker out of Czechoslovakia or Japan or somewhere that just, where did this guy come from? How didn't I know about him? And it just opens up totally new doors that are really, you get very excited about somebody's new process. And I just can't help but get excited whenever I see the Japanese prints. Yoshida, Hasui, Kuniyoshi, any of these guys, oh my goodness, they could print so beautifully. And so it's, if I'm feeling dry, I either go out sketching and come up with new ideas, or just go through my collection of Japanese prints, and that usually solves the lack of inspiration, and then you're all excited again and you want to go print.
Wow, that sounds great. Well, Leon, before I let you go, I wonder if you'd tell us, you mentioned that there's a Gorge Songs folio at the Corologos Gallery. What else
right.
do you have in this show?
There's a number of pieces. There's a night scene of the Rio Grande Gorge that I'm very excited about. There's another little sketch that is called Wild Horses Below Mount Blanca. And I was driving home from Santa Fe and just pulled off to take a break. And there was this view of Mount Blanca. It was just wonderful. Mm. And there's these wild horse herds in that area. And And I just sat there and watched them for a while and did a few little sketches and then came back and it became a woodblock. So that's at the gallery. The gallery is just very wonderful, very supportive of me and my creativity. I know Ann Korologos is very adamant that we push ourselves to be creative. And so she's always looking for that creative quality in the work. There's a large woodblock I did of Estes Park called Above Bear Lake. So this woodblock is 22 by 14 inches. And I stopped counting at 20 color bands. But it's so that's really kind of very dramatic, a snowy scene, winter, with the clouds rolling in, swirling around the peaks. So that's really fun.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds great. Leon Lockridge, thank you for joining us today here on KDNK.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very excited, and thank you for inviting me.